Oh, that was loud. Okay, yeah, but not with my style. Can you? Well, this is the program. I have a paper which is entitled Energy or Two Sons Arcology. So this will be the Two Sons program. And I'll begin with number one, matter, spirit, cooperation, confrontation, complexity, miniaturization. Number two, arcology, the concept, the models, the prototype, Arcosanti. Number three, energy, cosmic potentials, the vegetal trap, greenhouse effect, hydroponic and chimney effect, apse effect, and some example in Cosanti and Arcosanti. Then comes the subject itself, Two Sons Arcology, the concept, the layout, the model, and the model is exposed to the sun on solstice and equinox. So you have the winter solstice, the summer solstice, and the one equinox. Then there is a slide about a parallel between the megalopoly and the arcology. And at the beginning there are some visual sequences on the bridges, which were the beginning of the incorporation of more than one function in one structure. This scheme will come up now and then to explain where we are. This is a detail of this, and it happens to be a ramp beside being a bridge. This shows the progression from a sketch to a model. This is suspension bridge. The model was 45 feet, I think. And the peculiar character is that instead of having vertical pylons, it has slanted pylons. So this pylon works against that one through the cable tension. And on the tension of the cables, you put the highway, in this case a three-level highway, or cars, train and buses, trucks, and then maybe utilities. That was a sketch of the model, for the model. Now I'm trying to explain how I got to the arcology concept. I begin with a very general statement about reality in three so-called layers, what you might call layers. The deterministic way, which is the universal mass energy, the physical universe, and not being just a state or a condition but a process, you can call it a cosmogenesis. According to science, we think that this universe works according to laws of conservation of energy. Now, I listed here some of the characteristics that somehow relate to the problem of the city as a social and cultural instrument. So I'm saying that this universe is entropic, statistical, rational, granular, predictable, simulable, and structural. And I call this the world of indifference. Originating from this universe, from this substrata, there is the genetic way, the biological universe. And this, you could say, works according to laws of concentration of energy. Any organism or any society of organisms, it's a concentration in very specific ways of action, which means energy. this is a biogenesis. Again, it's a genesis. It's an evolutionary process. It is instinctual, unconscious, durational, evolutionary, irreversible, selective, non-simulable, sensitized, social, and morphological. The word of indifference, of innocence. Where you have indifference here you have innocence. In the sense that there is a sensitization here which somehow reject indifference. At the same time, you can hardly speak of a sinful animal. Good and evil somehow is absent in this universe. Supported by those two and utterly dependent on those two is the cultural way, the human way. And you could say that this way works according to laws of incrementation of energy if you take the mental and spiritual energy as a form of energy. So this is the homogenesis. It is mental, conscious, durational, evolutionary, irreversible, willful, non-simulable, compassionate, social, manipulative, and formal. This is where the idea of good and evil appears. If you take the genesis of the earth and then you see the development with it of life, you could say that you move from from insensitivity or dumbness into sensitivity and grace. So you have a transformation of matter into something more subtle, which we might call mental stuff, thinking stuff, spirit, what else? Now I'm moving slightly closer to the question of the city. And I'm saying that somehow coming from this kind of very general scheme, I could say something of this sort, consequent to the fortuitous or divine triggering of life, the universe of mass energy is in the process of materializing itself into spirit. This process. Intrinsic to this metamorphosis of mass energy into spirit is the ever-increasing complexity of systems carrying on a transformation. You begin from the simple, relatively simple, the atomic structure, the structure of the atom and the physical particles, into systems which become more and more complex, up to the mind of man, to the brain, which is somehow the epitome of complexity, as far as the single organism goes. The special mechanism of putting more into less, allowing for the incrementation of complexities in the miniaturization process. You cannot avoid the necessity of making things smaller when you're dealing with a constant incrementation of complexity. Complexity can only be achieved by putting more into less. On this earth, the most comprehensive structure embodied in becoming of the transition is the city. If you move from the single organism into the social organism, and you stay with the insects, for instance, you see that one of the best examples is the anthill or the beehive. There you have a very good organization in social terms of a kind of life which is mostly instinctual, defined by the matrix of a genetic development, and it's a social life, but has nothing to do with the cultural aspects of life, nor with the religious, nor with the aesthetic. So, as an example of a social city, you have the beehive. You move into the human, you must transcend the beehive and move into the actual city, which is an instrument not just for social, economic, and political development, but is a system for the development of humaneness. Moving somehow along this line, you can say that then the city, this etherealization machine, is governed by the physical energetic rules of complexity and miniaturization. Among the many options offered to contemporary man, the complex miniaturized city is the least optional in as much as it is mandatory for the spirit of the earth. This city is a social, economic, moral, cultural imperative, and under the demographic pressure is also a survival necessity. This gives the lie to most of our priorities and demythologizes practical man because his paradigms are bankrupt. The real man is the man of the spirit. This supposedly makes sense if you accept this transformation of matter into spirit, which is embodied in the evolution of life on this earth. Now, in this scheme of reference, there is the question of miniaturization, which is somehow an implosive process. So here I'm trying to illustrate why the implosive process is the living process and not the explosive one. I'm taking the seed as an example. The vegetal, the animal, the human, and the social seed originate a cycle of gathering and organizing matter in progressively complex and responsive organisms. If you plant a seed into the ground and you watch the tree developing from the seed, you can interpret that in two ways. One is that the seed explodes into something bigger than itself. The other one is to see the seed as the center of an implosion process, which is the environment gathering in very selective ways around the seed in organizations which are very, very peculiar. So in a way you can see the tree as the synopsis, as some kind of a collection selectively of the elements composing the environment into a living system which has an interiorized kind of existence. This kind of activity presumes a totally cooperative work. The living is a cooperative process, not a disintegrative one, which happens to be death. It is an implosive process, not an explosive one. It is a miniaturization process which favors the ever more complex interaction making the becoming. You really miniaturize in very special terms the surrounding, which is somehow scattered and haphazardly scattered into a very definite morphology, which has specific functions and a highly organized structure. You could state this in those two paradigms. In any given system, the liveliest quantum is also the most complex. In any given system, the most complex quantum is also the most miniaturized. And in a way, to represent this forcefully, or at least it seems to me clearly, you can take a certain amount of matter, let's say a pile of sand, that weighs 150 pounds, and then see what this pile of sand becomes when it becomes a living organism, a person. The components are identical, the atomic and subatomic structures, but the end result and somehow the thrust of it, it's immensely different. So you have a miracle there which transforms a pile of dead matter into a pulsating and active organism. And this can only be achieved by putting more and more and more into this amount of matter, which otherwise would be very elementary, very simple, and almost deprived of any reality. Now, moving into the arcology, which is based on this guideline, I'm saying that we have a number of problems which are very present to our society, especially the Western society. We deal with exploding population, which is a universal problem, the ecological problem, the problem of waste, which is connected with the ecological problem, and the problem of pollution, which is a problem of waste, conservation, air, water, and land. We have a problem of affluence there connected with the problem of waste. The question of segregation, which is not a simple separation of ethnic groups or social stratas or wealth degrees, but it's a question of really separating all the different kind of activities and systems and institutions that are serving them. So it's an environmental question, not just a social question. And then we have the energy problem, which is very present to everyone now. And the question of a future, do we have a future or we don't? Well, what I'm stating here that if we are serious about this set of problems, then the answer, it's there. Nowhere else but there. But the answer is still a mean to something which is greater than those functions. And this something is the quality of life. So what I'm saying is that the ecological commitment, this idea of going about developing the landscape for mankind, it's only an instrument to a better level of consciousness and a more creative condition. At this point, I'm trying to move from the from the conceptual into the visual. And the problem was how to try to express this paradigm in terms of urban systems. So out of the 45 or so ideas, I developed about 30 for the ecology book, for the ecology book. And most of you have seen those, so I won't stop too long. This is a floating system. It has production or transformation subsystems where you take from the sea the materials that you are after, and those can be minerals, proteins, or chemicals. And slowly you can develop a certain autonomous life in those centers, and then when many of those centers become clustered, you can develop urban ribbons so that the whole system becomes a metropolitan floating center. So you define a civilization of the sea, for instance, which could have a different character from a civilization of the land. This would indicate a digestive process. You take the water, you take off the water, the materials you need, and then you spew it out, you transform it, you store it, and you can ship it. And then you develop research and urban life, the water level, it's about there. The same scheme here, same idea, but a different structural layout. Again, a small community which can develop into a larger metropolitan system in time. That's the water level. the dam, it's a good example of a dead arcology in somehow, because it's a big structure which could contain a large population, so that it would become a mini city. The only thing to do would be to carve the monolith and make it into a perforated structure, which could be naturally as strong, if not stronger, than the monolith. And by doing so, you introduce life into this fairly substantial structural system. You have water for a number of things: power, irrigation, domestic use, and recreation. So if you cut through there, you could see something of this kind. Cut through there, you have the water body, and then two diaphragms, one against the water for warehousing and so on, the other one for residential purposes, which is the one you see there. And then the other structure, which are integral part of the main structure, would be for the public and commercial and productive and learning and health and so on. So though you still have a separation of functions in a way, you have an integration of them all, because it's a big building but a very tiny city, not comparable to Phoenix, for instance, which is about 400 square miles or 300 square miles. The same idea in much smaller terms of a dam that becomes a center for research or a center for learning or what do you call it? Resort area center, like much larger one. That I think was over 100,000 population suggested. Some of the, let's say, land archaeologists, this was a twin city-like, and the size is such that you can walk throughout it, or bicycle throughout it, or take elevators, escalators, and so on. So this, if this dimension is less than 2 miles, you're part of an intense urban life. At the same time, you can very quickly leave the urban landscape and move into the open landscape. This, I think, does a number of things. For one, it cuts the size of all the services to a fraction of what they are needed now. By doing this, you naturally cut not just the bulk of the services themselves, but the bureaucratic machineries that are needed to run those services. Those are different examples of, again, trying to illustrate in symbolic forms what the three-dimensionality produces into the cityscape. And the third dimension is necessary in order to have miniaturization, because it's on a vertical dimension that you need only about 10 feet of distance between performances. So that's the dimension which becomes the frugal dimension. And I have to remind you that the logistics of anything that has a life, it's a fundamental, it's the basis for the life of the system. Poor logistics means poor life. You can think in for a moment if the brain doesn't get enough blood for even a few minutes, you lose part of the brain cells. So logistics are absolutely the fundamental support of any kind of consciousness. The automobile stops at the edge of the city. There are no roads, only streets in the city, pedestrian malls, etc. So the automobile could not even get in if it wanted. Some very quick models of some more details model you see. This is this 30,000 suggested population. This is the Empire State Building. This was about 30,000, I think, was another dam. This is 170,000, 200 and some thousand, and 400 and some thousand. And then again, this the Empire State Building. So you're dealing with a very large building, but a very tiny city. It's this one, and you have a scale there, Empire State Building. All those models are, as I was saying, are mostly symbols. They are very abstract. In this case, for instance, there is indication of many levels inside, and those many levels would be mainly for the aspects of the city which are not the private aspects. So you might have some production, commerce, exchange, cultural activities, and so on. And the outer skin of the building would be where you develop most of the private sector of the city. This was for about 170,000, and Someone had suggested the city can develop at least in two phases, this phase and that phase. There are very large open spaces midway here. And here we try to suggest that though the general scheme might be given at a certain point, the detailing of the city can constantly change and be in a way personalized. Yet the intervention of the user in a very different way, by its own design or by design, by the architect that he chooses, or the planner or whatever it is. This is one of the large area expanses coming out from the main body. This is a little stadium. Naturally, you don't have to go this far in structural and organizational terms to have an arcology. You can be very simple. In fact, we have a photograph of one building city in Siberia, and it's just a rectangular plan, maybe 20 story high, and it's like a super block. This was a little bigger, about 200 and some thousand, and it's a cluster of vertical structure that you can compare to skyscrapers. But by the fact that they are connected at different levels, you come up with an integrated system instead of having a segregated system. And this involves logistical swiftness, which you don't have when you're there and you have to go down and then up. This was a little larger one, and one of the scary one, because it's so abstract. But it was an exercise in trying to give yourself a certain volume and then try to organize it. See how you could subdivide it in blades and spaces which are open but sheltered and so on. This is the interior over there. A space capsule that could serve about 70,000 people. It's a cylinder, you see half of it there, and it has a rotation on this axis. And so between the fact that it's a tensile structure, because there is an atmosphere and then outside you have the vacuum, so it's a pressurized system. And the fact that it rotates this way makes for a very light structure, but very strong. And the rotation causes local gravity, so you are standing inside this landscape, which, because the cylinder is lined by vegetation, which is part of the food production of this community. And you can fly out from your residence by your own flapping of your arms and so on, like swimming in air. This is the center of the city, with a little river that it's a water circle like ring. So this is where you have more density of action. And by working on this, you realize some of the extremes that the city has to face sometimes, like self-reliance, the character of the interior as against the character of the exteriors, the interiorization of the whole system, evidently the miniaturization question, the efficiency question, the desegregation question, and the conservation up to a limit. Adopting the idea of the linear city, which I think it's a good idea, you can see it in archaeological terms, which means the containment on the transversal dimension, so that no matter how you develop the single plugged-in communities, which can be of different sizes, you're always very close to the main transportation system that in the section would be there, which is there, where there. So you have main transportation systems of both kind, from rubber wheels to aircrafts, pneumatic and so on. And then you have the arcologies, the cities of different kinds, different dimensions, different productive cycles. And so wherever you are in those arcology, you are very close to this logistical ring, to the urban life, and also to the open landscape. I would say the Empire State Building is about that much. This was a very sketchy, very, very quick cardboard model we made at the Corcoran. So you should take it with some reservation. But this stands for an airport which could be on the roof of this linear city every once in a while. You can have major airports or smaller landing strip. Now, if you adopt that criteria, what you cannot do is to break the ring, because if you break the ring, you break the logistics. So you have to keep carrying this corridor and close the ring so that you have the best kind of logistics, in which case you might have an obstacle like a canyon, and you might build a bridge which becomes a city. Or in another structural system, a bridge which also becomes a city or a center of activities. And finally, a very quick, it was a fairly quick idea for an air terminal, which becomes a full-fledged center of life. So instead of the place where nobody wants to really land, which is at the known place of the airport, you practically land inside the city. And what you do, you land or take off the landing strips and the runways, yeah, thank you. And then the aircrafts are turned off and they are pulled in or pulled out from or to this ring, which is really the taxiing ring that feeds from the city or in the city. So the passengers are loading here or they are unloading here, which means practically at the center of the city, which is this hub. It's 800 meters by 2.5 kilometers. It's at the center of a development of parks indicated here, and below the parks are industrial parks, universal spaces which can be adapted to different kinds of production cycles, so that the aircrafts also feed on those industrial centers and vice versa. This was about 1 million population, I think. This is a taxiing ring in section. So you have to see this as a half of the circular hub. The parks and open spaces at a different level. There's a 5 mile promenade bridge there. In this instance, we define some of the time and space gaps between activities. So if you are a service repairman, for instance, you might come from out of the city and you start your daily service work. And because of the quickness, the swiftness that you can afford in this kind of environment, you can do much more with your time. And in traveling throughout the city, hopefully, by intention, you would travel in a very interesting kind of environment. Because if the city is only a machine for living, then you are stuck with a machine. If the city becomes a cultural mechanism, then you might have a great time in moving throughout it. This was a view of the interior that one of the students designed. This was an out-of-town executive, again, showing the different kinds of stops throughout the day. Now, I went briefly through the number one matter, spirit, cooperation, confrontation, complexity, miniaturization, through the arcology, the concept, the model, and now we are the prototype. And here again, most of you have seen all this, so I'm going to go quickly. This is the Agua Fria River, which was running. It always runs here, but when you have a flash flood, it runs pretty high sometimes. Morning before breakfast meeting on the opposite side of Arcosanti. This is kind of rock formation we are building on. It's a basaltic rock. You can see it there. Going back from the meeting to the building site. The camp, which was established 5 years ago, and the building site as it was 3 years ago, I think. It's the Agua Fria River. We own from here about 3 miles this way toward the highway. Looking from there this way on the farmland, our land stops in the back of this ledge and in the back of that ledge. The garden 3 years ago, the building site. There's Natalie driving the crane. The garden, half of the garden a year ago. A little later on, I have something to say about the apses, but those are the apses, which are a spherical structure, quarter of a sphere, which are open toward the outside. And I'll explain why. As you see here, in a traditional ways, the apsides are turned toward the inside. So they create a certain condition, which is very, very different from the condition that I am after. Beside that, the wall becomes a double wall here, so that you have activities going on within the structure itself. The model as you saw it, as you see it in the North Studio. This is to indicate the variety of interventions in different people doing their own different things for their own residence or studios. Some of the progress of the building. This is the main building. We got that far, plus somewhere here the blue outline, and then the same in actual landscape. So this vault, it's on the axis of the main building, which is half here and half there, more or less. And our land stops about there. That's the highway there. So this would become a sanctuary, which would be used by the community. When you see in the model, it's this vault. Then you'll see the building of those two residences, and then there'll be more buildings. The ceramics apse, which is at the same center of this big apse, and the foundry. The first foundation for one side of the vault, some of the blasting, the vault being assembled, a view from the west 3 years ago, the making of the panels for the vault, This is silt and linoleum, painted linoleum. Those are going to be windows. We have 12 of those panels for one vault. And there you see the slab which has been cast on this silt, that thickness being, after the curing, being assembled. And there you see the transference of the colors from the silt into the concrete. The ceramics, the beginning of the ceramics, apps, making of panels, modular elements, the assemblage of them. Silt again used as a forming device and as a texture device to make the shell of the apps. The east residence, one of the rooms in the east residence, the west, no, still the east residence. That's east, should be turned around. One of the roofs in the residence inside there. The foundry area being built. The outer skin of the foundry and the scaffolding for the silt casting. The silt being ready for the casting on this lower layer. And we are finishing the casting. Those are windows for those residential areas. Windows. We are ready for the second half of the skin of the apse. Those are two-level studios with rooms scattered around and services in the foundry. This is before the roof has been cast. This is after the roof has been cast. This is the vault where we assemble the units. Those are the two residents with an office. This is the foundry with the residents. This is the ceramics studio. And this is six residential rooms there. A restaurant with services there. And then on top, a exhibition hall. The foundry being developed a little more for the different kinds of functions. This is the restaurant here, the exhibition and the private rooms with terraces. A late afternoon shot. I shouldn't move, I guess. Thank you. The beginning of this, well, the beginning is underground, but coming up one floor, we are putting the floor now. And then the second floor coming up, and then the panels for the main two-level floor. Thank you. We use silt again for some of the patterns in the ceiling. Let's turn around. I'm missing a slide. We were now at the energy phase of the presentation, and if about 15 years ago I was interested in, or 20 years ago I was interested in solar energy in form of infrared, water, wind. And I was trying to integrate some kind of structure that would channel or concentrate those energies, and also would be a shelter for different kinds of functions. So, for instance, in using wind, I was imagining that you have a the top of a hill, for instance, of a windy countryside, and you would produce some kind of a star system where, in, no matter what the wind direction is, you would capture it and concentrate the pressure into a turbine, and this would create this kind of a shape that would be a sheltered space where you could develop, for instance, a village. So you have the integration of a machine, of a wind machine, and a center for life. And the same idea, it's on this side, but using infrared, you have the sun energy that fits on the south side. Sun energy, you produce some heat, and you can have hot water, or you can heat salts and different kinds of things as a storage of energy. And then you have a chimney, so that you have an updraft, and possibly you could create some electric energy by putting a turbine there. But the main thing was that you expose part of the skin of the building to the sunshine and capture some of this energy. The same idea on a different kind of scheme. You have a, like this kind of a shape of a building, and inside of it you can collect quite a bit of energy, again infrared, because you expose a large area. You can make it black, so you have a black collector, then again you have an updraft, and possibly you can, if you, beside ventilation of the land, let's say, you could do something else maybe with it. And by making many of those, one against the other, you create a very large shaded area, a conditioned ground, using infrared again, and a big tall building, using again sun energy. This was a series of parabolic mirrors stacked one on top of the other one, vertical. And those mirrors would be made by a liquid, reflecting liquid that would concentrate the energy on the focal axis. So you have all those elements which are heated, and from there you move into direct use or storage or transformation of the heat energy into electricity. This was again the idea of the wind. No matter what the direction is, you capture some of it, you trap some of it. This is a mix of updrafts and infrared. This, again, it's a parabolic or pseudo-parabolic mirror exposed toward the south, let's say. And then you can put many of those together, and again, you transform the land, if it's a very hot country, for instance, and you can insert some activities within the double skin of the building. Infrareds, again. But my problem became more and more the fact that I was trying to use a way which is used by the vegetal kingdom to feed something which is beyond the vegetal kingdom. That's what I call the vegetal trap. The vegetal kingdom can use the solar energy in the best way, because it's very extensive, and the chlorophyll function, it's what makes minerals into proteins, into organic matter. But the need is a great extension for a kind of life which is somehow tenuous. And here I was trying to use a tenuous kind of energy, in the very scattered energy of the sun, for a highly concentrated kind of phenomenon, the phenomenon of society. This, in a way, was the most interesting. If you have a pass between mountains, usually you have a very reliable wind, which tends to be one unidirectional. So, according to this wind, you would set a big trap, like a funnel, and you would have production of energy there. Then, if it happened that the funnel, for instance, is exposed to the north, on your side you have a big sun collector, or otherwise you have the sun collector on the other side if it's exposed to the south. So you combine wind and infrared to support the life of this community. Now we got through matter, spirit, arcology, energy. We are the cosmic potential, which the name I use for those is energy collecting devices. And the vegetal trap, now I am at the greenhouse effect. Then we go into the hydroponic, and the chimney should go with the greenhouse, really. And then the apse effect, which is the last one. This is a scheme of different ways of using the greenhouse effect. You have a greenhouse, which is the orthodox way of producing foodstuff under glass. So you have a normal diagram where you have to pump in air or heat or cooling by mechanical devices. You might try to avoid that or to reduce this need of mechanical devices by stepping up the greenhouse and introducing the chimney effect, which is the acceleration of the air, because the air gets warm and tends to move vertically. So that this is a self-ventilating greenhouse. Another way of using the greenhouse is to put a house inside of it and become a little more sophisticated. Instead of making the usual greenhouse, you make a dome, for instance, or a geodesic dome, and then you build floors and so on, and you live in a greenhouse. It sounds good, but it doesn't work. The skin of the greenhouse, it lets come through too much heat, or too much heat goes out of it. So sometimes you're very hot, sometimes you're very cold, and so on. So the idea is good, but we are not vegetables. That's the main problem. Another way of using a greenhouse is to not to produce foodstuff, but to produce heat for the house. So your greenhouse, and then you pump the heat into the house when you need the heat. You get a little more sophisticated, you reduce somehow the scale and the form of the greenhouse, and you make a sun collector incorporated in the house. Then you can combine those two criteria and produce foodstuff and also heat for your house. And you can pump it. You can pump the heat in the house and then eat the vegetables, or sell them, or store them. You combine this idea with this idea, and you let the greenhouse pump itself off and feed the house. Then you make a quantum jump. You move from the family into the social structure. You have many houses together. You put them under one glass thing connected with the greenhouse and the chimney effect. So you have the greenhouse, foodstuff production, heat production, and your town being fed both energy and foodstuff. Then you take this, which is a pretty peculiar way of assembling a city, and you make it into a sensitized structure, which by itself will accept or reject those radiations which are favorable or unfavorable. And if you carry on with this, with the miniaturization and complexity system, you then have a pretty comprehensive device for a social and cultural life. You have the greenhouse pumping heat into the city, you have the food produce used by the city or used as a bartering device, and then the city itself is that sensible kind of structure which tries to make the best use of the infrared, mainly of the heat of the sun. So the next few slides are about this criteria. But before I get there, I had to take this diagram and indicate what does it mean in terms of an actual structure. So we are at the Apps effect, and I'm using Kozanti and Nakozanti as examples. We have many apses here, those spherical structures, and two of them are facing north, so they are not important for this explanation, but the other ones facing south are pertinent to this use of solar energy. This is facing north, so it projects always quite a bit of shade within the area that it shelters and also beyond it. But this is facing south, and in the winter, because of the of the overhang, you separate yourself from the cold radiations from the sky. At the same time, you collect the sun energy, which it's constantly pouring in because the sun is very low on the horizon. It comes up on the east, southeast, so even early in the morning it begins to feed in, and so it does in late afternoon. But in the summer the story changes. The sun comes up on the north side, and so this becomes a fairly good shade, and you can add to it by putting awnings, for instance, or additional shades. This is also south side, and it works like this one, south oriented. This is a morning, probably in late spring. You see that the sun begins to be should be cut off by the profile of the apse. Now in Nakozanti we are going to much larger scale, but the idea is very similar. Number one, no matter what the orientation is, you, by using this kind of a scheme, you frame the landscape in very special way. You have light effects which are very peculiar and very interesting. You have a sheltered space which is in and out in a way, and within that sheltered space you can come up with activities which are also, I think, very interesting. But for the one which are exposed to the south, you have also this, in a way, a cosmic relationship to the infrared action. So in a way, the apse work as a sun machine, just by the shape and by the orientation of itself. So those are some of the reasons of the use of this structural system. To suggest a little what you can do within the wall itself of the apse, those slides are indicating the space, which is 17 feet deep, where you would have the smallest module for living in Nakozanti, and you can put a mezzanine there. So this is a space for one person or maybe a couple, and they can arrange it according to their own needs. And on this window looks out into the open landscape, this window looks in into the cityscape. The more you go up, because of the meeting of the spherical with the horizontal, you change the character of the space. Now, this is a south exposure in the winter. This is close to the solstice in the winter, the shortest day of the year. And you see how deep the sunshine has penetrated inside. This is still that double wall in the big apse. Now you're looking at that. Before you were looking at that. Now, in toward the summer, you get a different condition. Now, this is probably early in the morning, so it's not necessarily summer. But in the summer, you get very much this kind of an effect inside. This is a winter condition again. And you see that it's morning, let's say, maybe 10 o'clock, and the sun has penetrated inside. this is definitely close to the summer, because this is before the sun turns to on the south side. The sun is still on the north side, so the south exposed wall is still in the shade. So early morning, when the sun is very biting, because it's slow on the horizon, you produce a volume of shade. By the time the sun turns around, it's very high, so you still have quite a bit of shade then. This is the winter again, probably 10 or 11 in the morning, you can see the penetration of the sunshine. This is late afternoon, but the same criteria applies. This is probably around noon. We have a meeting, and you see everybody's in the sunshine, not only, but it's sheltered. So the cold radiations are stopped by the shell. The warm radiations are accepted.